Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The Middle East is facing a dangerous new shock after the United States and Israel launched major strikes on Iran, opening a fast-moving conflict that is already ripping across the region. Reports say that the attack has hit military and strategic targets, while the fallout has disrupted air travel, rattling energy markets, and raising fears of a wider regional war involving Iran's allies and neighboring states. To help us understand what this means, we're joined by Brent Sasley, professor of political science at the University of Texas at Arlington. And Dr. Sasley, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Okay, happy to be here.
So, the reports have been coming in last 3 days, United States, Israel launching strikes, missiles at Iran. So this is probably a fundamental question. Like, it may seem obvious or ridiculous, but are we at war? I mean, we are at war, right?
We are. I think it's a very fair assessment to say that. The United States has sent a considerable amount of military equipment to the Middle East to engage in this attack on Iran with Israel in coordination with Israel. Iran has fired back, so there is an exchange of fire. So it may not look like the classic old giant tanks on the battlefield, but this is certainly a war.
No declaration of war from the United States?
No. American presidents have for a long, many years not wanted to go through Congress for that. They preferred the freedom. So even though the Constitution does give Congress the right to declare war, or the only body to be able to declare war, presidents have gotten around it by engaging in military action and just not calling it war.
Right, but Donald Trump has called this a war.
He has. This is partly why we see some congressional leaders have been pushing to try and take that power back, the authority back, to be able to determine that. I think there's a legal term in the United States, and then there's also the term that we use in sort of popular parlance, and that's the way that most people are thinking of the war right now, I think.
Okay. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Listeners, if you want to jump in here, you got a question, a comment, what are your concerns about what's happening with this war the United States is now in with Iran? So Iran has been a state sponsor of terror for decades. We know that it has actively worked to destabilize the region and has been committed to the destruction of Israel. And so there are probably a lot of reasons that people can come up with for why the United States would want to go to war with Israel. So why with Iran? So why now?
I think that there's probably a convergence of factors. The first thing, though, I think it's important to note is that this is what we would call a war of choice. There was no direct or imminent Iranian threat to the United States. So there was no urgent reason to try and preempt or prevent any kind of Iranian attack. In terms of why now, the most immediate sort of tactical reason is that the Israelis and the Americans, who have been sharing intelligence for decades, managed to get very good intelligence that there would be a meeting, not just including the supreme leader of Iran, but a number of high-ranking national security officials. And so it was an opportunity that they decided that they couldn't pass up. In terms of the broader context, Iran has been weakened since last year when it got involved, or when it was brought involved, when Israel was at war with Hamas. Israel had attacked Iran with the United States. A number of Iranian clients around the region, including Hezbollah in Lebanon, Israel had attacked them, weakened them. So Iran was probably at its lowest point of power and influence in decades. And also the United States, President Trump, has been talking about this for a long period of time. Even in his first administration, he had mentioned the possibility of going to war with Iran. So I think that there were a combination of factors leading up to it, and then the timing itself, there was an opportunity there that they felt could not be missed.
The Trump administration has said that there was an immediate threat, that Iran, they said, was only weeks away from having a nuclear weapon, and that they were developing ballistic missiles that they said would soon be able to reach the United States.
I don't think, I mean, we'll need more information. I don't know that Iran was weeks away from developing a nuclear weapon. It certainly has had a missile program, an intercontinental ballistic missile program, and it has its nuclear program. But, you know, over the last number of years, its program, nuclear program, has been degraded several times. It does try to rebuild it, but it's not that close to developing a nuclear weapon or a way to deliver it to the United States. So those don't count as direct threats. I mean, a direct threat would be Iran having the ability and the United States finding out that it was about to send bombers or fighter jets or missiles against the United States. There was nothing like that. And there's also not, we know that many countries, including the United States and Donald Trump, the Trump administration, do oppose an Iranian nuclear weapon, but that in itself isn't necessarily an imminent threat. Iran, like I said, we don't know, it wasn't that close to one, but just because it had one doesn't mean it would use it. I think an argument can be made that Iran would be tempted to use it more for defensive purposes to ensure that there would be no Israeli or American attack, as there was last year. So I think that those factors make it harder to argue that there was an imminent threat.
Right. Objective observers weigh that assessment of a nuclear weapon being developed quickly or ballistic missiles be able to reach the United States. They rate that as not true. Also, this meeting of and the being able to spot that the supreme leader of Iran in his office and be able to bomb him there and kill him, which they did. This also happened as the United States had been moving aircraft carriers and other assets into the region. This has been coming for a while.
Yes, I mean that gets back to the point that you asked, why now. It has been building. The administration has been preparing for it. So it was likely to happen at some point. And then again, when they had this opportunity that they felt they couldn't pass up, that now was the time.
Right. And so also recently we saw popular uprisings in Iran, thousands of people killed by the Iranian regime in order to suppress or depress those uprisings, mm-hmm. the people who were taking to the streets, demanding a new leadership and a new government. Was that also a signal that now was the time?
I don't know that the Iranian domestic politics played a major role in the consideration. The regime is committed to staying in power. I mean, the Iranian regime has no intention of stepping down. And as we saw, it's willing to use force to against its own citizens to be able to try and stay in power. So, you know, it's hard. I think administration officials were watching, and it's hard to watch those images and think, you know, okay, we can leave it. We don't have to do anything. So I would say it's at best they provided kind of additional justification.
All right. And if the objective is regime change, that's going to be a hard thing to achieve. Let's take a break here. Our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. What have you got to say about the United States at war with Iran? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the U.S. war along with Israel against Iran. What is happening? Where could this go? Why now? What are the objectives? With us is Dr. Brent Sasley. He is a professor of political science at the University of Texas at Arlington. And let's go to Nick. And Nick, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I am an Iranian that came to this country at a very young age. And for the most part, I'm an American. And I have benefited from the American democracy and what I have seen happening to my countrymen. And, you know, the massacre that just happened a couple of weeks ago, your guest eloquently basically articulated what we want. I think the United States and the American citizens, for the most part, want a country that's going to be democratically elected, basically government, and is going to be taking care of their people rather than worrying about all of the proxies all over the world and basically supporting all of the terrorists all over the place. So I am 100% behind what has happened. And I actually praise Mr. Trump, even though I didn't vote for him. I really appreciate what he has done, and I couldn't be happier. Thank you so much.
Well, Nick, we appreciate your phone call. And so, Dr. Sasley, your reaction to Nick's comments.
There's no doubt that the Iranian regime is, as I said, has no problem using force against its own citizens. In terms of regime change, that is a goal that the Trump administration has articulated. It has not laid out a clear case for why now, and it does not look like there's a plan for what might happen after. But regime change, I mean, that's a very dramatic risk that one would take. It's also a violation of international law. And then the last thing that I would say about that, regime change cannot occur from missile strikes or airstrikes alone. The only way to ensure a real regime change, and certainly one that doesn't bounce back, would be through boots on the ground, a ground invasion that would lead to a long-term occupation. Beyond that, the regime will have the ability to recuperate and regroup.
I remember when there was another attempt for regime change in the Middle East with Iraq, and there were people celebrating in the streets of Baghdad that Saddam Hussein was gone and that he was dead, and then that went south. The concern is we could be there again.
Yes, I think that's the comparison. That's an apt comparison. In that case, the administration said that Iraq posed an imminent direct threat to the United States. It did begin with a bombing campaign. It did say it wanted regime change. So I think, you know, we do try to learn lessons from history. And I think in that case, one of the lessons was engaging in regime change is not a healthy foreign policy. Certainly not when you don't have a plan for what to do afterward. And again, there's no, as far as we can tell, there is no plan for what's going to happen if the regime even fell.
The I guess the rosy colored glasses view is that there would be a democratic response, and the people who have been protesting in the streets saying that they're done with the theocracy and they wanted a democratic reforms, but that creates this vacuum. And there are so many bad actors in that part of the world who are willing to rush in and fill that vacuum. Things may not go the way you think they're going to go.
Yes, I think you're right. And then it also gets back to the Iraq example that you mentioned. To say that if we will kill off all the leaders of the regime and then the citizens of Iran will rise up and install a democracy, there's a long process that has to occur to get from one of those points to the next. And that would take a considerable amount of resources. I mean, right now, I mean, think about the destruction and the chaos that's happening in Iran now. If the entire regime was removed, and again, that includes militant groups like the Revolutionary Guard, then you're going to have a power vacuum at the top. You're not going to have institutions. You're not going to have law and order. And so to expect people to pull out of that a democratic system, or at least the process on the way to a democratic system. Again, there's no evidence for something like that. It's just unlikely to happen.
Currently, we're hearing from inside of Iran that the government, the regime, still has operational control of the streets. They're still doing, checks. They're still controlling. They're not putting down any attempts for uprisings. They're still very active. There's no sign of internal collapse.
Yes. I mean, the regime did take a hit. There's no doubt about it. The supreme leader, a number of top national security officials, but it's still around. It's still entrenched. I mean, it's had a chance to build a system of rule and a system of repression over decades. And so it's not going to fall very easily. And there are a number of people who could, you know, rise up and take the place of those who were killed. And as well, they have the military. They have, as I said, the paramilitary groups like the Revolutionary Guard. And they're committed. They're not interested in giving up. And they're certainly not going to say just because their supreme leader was killed that that's a sign that they should surrender. They're committed to staying in power. They have a version or a vision of Iran that they want to promote, that they're interested in implementing, no matter what it takes. And that's not going to go away. That kind of idea doesn't go away just by killing some of the people.
Well, we're hearing from Secretary of Defense, calls himself Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, that we could continue these strikes for 2, 4, maybe 6 weeks. So we're hearing the same thing from Donald Trump. What more could be gained by continuing to bomb this country?
The assumption would be that they can be bombed into surrender, that the regime would be, you know, its military assets would be so degraded, and so many of the regime, the top people in it have been killed and the others in hiding, that there's just no capacity for resistance left, that would be enough to push the regime to engage in a surrender. And even if there was anyone who was left to surrender, even if that didn't happen and the United States was ready to stop the military attack, the assumption is that that would have so severely degraded Iran's military that it would not pose a threat in any way to anyone for decades to come.
Could this be a gross miscalculation, and what you actually do is solidify the people of Iran behind the regime in an opposition to the United States and Israel?
I think that there's a strong likelihood that the gamble does not pay off. So certainly it was a risk, engaging in this major military attack against a major regional power. It's a risk. But I am not sure. I think it's more likely that it will not pay off than that it would pay off. And again, for all the reasons that I said, the regime is embedded. It's entrenched. It's willing to use force. It's willing to use violence against its own citizens. We also haven't seen the full extent of the Iranian retaliation. I mean, it's launched missiles in the area, but it hasn't launched more missiles. I mean, it's still holding some back, although Israel has said that much of its capacity has been destroyed, nor has it activated its agents or client organizations around the world, not just in the Middle East, that it could do that to engage in activities sort of, so to speak, behind the front lines. So the regime is not, I mean, it's down, but it's certainly not out at this point. That may well take many, you know, a long period of time. And again, as you said earlier, we don't know what's going to happen next, even if the regime is destroyed. And again, that's a big if. We don't know who would take power. There's no guarantee that there would be some democratic process that takes place. It could be hardliners. It could be people who take a lesson from this and say, well, now for sure we need to go full speed to try and develop a nuclear weapon so this doesn't happen again. So it is risky. I don't see long-term change happening without any kind of long-term occupation. It's just there's no real historical example of that. And so there's nothing that suggests that that would work.
According to polling, 3/4 of Americans do not support this war. What if, you know, the White House, they look at the numbers and they say, wow, this is not popular. We've got a midterm coming up. This is hurting us. Let's just, you know, walk away from this. We will declare victory and stop the bombings, and we'll all just say, okay, it's over now, and just walk away from Iran, just obliterated as it is. How does that play out?
I don't think it plays out well. And again, we have the example of Iraq, not 2003, but the first Gulf War, when George H.W. Bush was president, and they had already, the United States had already degraded, destroyed much of the Iraqi military. The United States said to Iraqi citizens, now is your chance to rise up. We will be there. We will help you. We will protect you. And you did have uprisings in the south by the Shia and in the north by the Kurds, but the United States did not get involved. And so what ended up happening was that Saddam Hussein was able to massacre a large number of citizens and crush any opposition to him, which allowed him to stay in power for a very long period of time. So I'm not so sure that the United States is prepared to do anything any more now than it was back then. Because again, that would take boots on the ground. It would take an occupation. It would take a commitment of resources. And I'm not sure that the Trump administration is interested in committing that many resources. I mean, Trump campaigned that he was a different kind of president who would not drag the United States into regional conflicts. We're seeing the opposite now. So I would assume that the Trump administration will be, at some point, will say, have we done enough? Could we pull back? Can we say that we've achieved our objectives?
We're seeing the price of oil spike, concerns about the Strait of Hormuz and this conflict. That's going to become inflationary, which is a core issue, affordability here in the United States. This will impact the U.S. economy, you think?
Yes, the assumption is that it will. I mean, oil markets get jittery very easily. And this is a major conflict, a major attack on, it's not the world's largest oil producer, but it's significant. And the Straits of Hormuz, as you said, I mean, it's a significant waterway by which oil from parts of the region are able to be shipped outside to others. That makes an oil market jittery. That has an impact on oil prices here, even here in Arlington and Texas. And so that is going to have, clearly, we've already seen the price of oil have started to go up. So that will have an effect. And, you know, as oil prices go up, that will have implications for prices of other goods, the ability of people to purchase these goods, and so on. So, yes, I think that also gets back to the riskiness, I think, of this approach, that there will be severe negative implications for the economy. It might take some time for us to see that. But I think we've already started to see some small rising in the price of oil.
So the immediate concern is further escalation, more retaliation from Iran, more strikes from the U.S. and Israel. And we're seeing possibly spreading to Lebanon. There's a lot of questions about this becoming bigger than we had expected and that we had bargained for. And so, you know, what should you be looking for? What are you looking for to seeing this is going out of control?
The two main things would be how much more will Israel and the United States, what more will they do? Will they intensify? Will they keep at it really until the regime does fall? I mean, is that their actual goal? I know that that's been said to be the goal. But will they do that? And again, that will create a power vacuum in Iran that it will have spillover effects for the entire region. And that's one thing. And then the second thing is, and I mentioned this, you know, that Iran hasn't used the full ability to retaliate yet. If Iran decides to not just use missiles against American forces in the Middle East, but to try and activate organizations and agents around the world, then I think that would set off kind of another broader chain of events. So what Iran does, I think, is going to also be key. Yeah, I mean, Iran is not, I wouldn't use the word exercise restraint, but Iran has not, its response has been primarily directed against military targets. And so there's still a lot of room for it to do something else. We should watch for that.
So this could get a lot worse. Brent Sasley is a professor of political science at the University of Texas at Arlington. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate your insights.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back from the break, should we be concerned about drones coming in from Mexico? The United States apparently is preparing for that, maybe over-preparing. We've already seen the outcome of that. We're going to be talking about militarization on the border against drones. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.